we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Telegraph, read by Peter Donaldson.
Coalition in tatters on eve of Kenya poll as opinion polls have put Mr. Kibaki's camp, represented by a banana, in the rear.
Oh, thanks to Paul Rundle of Sheffield for sending that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Linda Smith. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Armando Iannucci. Andy, your traditional easy question. Who claims the worried well should have GPs well worried?
Right, well, this is a story about the flu vaccine, and the problem is that it's all been used up, so that it can no longer be given to the priority cases, which, as I understand it, are elderly people, people with asthma, comedy writers with a bit of a sniffle. And the good news is the government have worked out whose fault it is. It's the doctors and the public. Because the doctors have been willfully stopping people willy-nilly in the street and forcing flu vaccine on them, saying you look a bit pasty.
I was pulled in off the street by my GP. It was Blair, obviously, given the size of my pensions. If I start taking my pension, the country goes bust. And so he wants to keep me alive forever. And I've had an armful of this stuff. It's wonderful. I was also given a poultry gun. I mean, any chicken with a runny beak within 100 metres of me, shot dead. Very good.
But it doesn't help you with bird flu. This is the thing, people have been worried about bird flu and thinking it's going to help them. I don't know, how do you even tell whether birds have got flu? Do they get all a bit achy and start getting a bit lethargic and think, oh, no, I'm going to lie in bed today? And it's, I don't know, how do you tell with them?
Well, the female birds just have a slight cold. It's I hate myself for saying this, but it's the cocks that give you real trouble.
The ultra-efficient, well-oiled, highly tuned National Health Service has geared itself up for the height of the winter flu season by running out of vaccine. Claims that fears of bird flu had led to demands from the worried well, who would stop at nothing to get the vaccine, were confirmed this week after one GP had his surgery broken into by a group of heavily armed parrots.
If you followed the government's logic, what they really want is a nation of unworried sick. Yes. Because economically, that's people who just peg out but don't bother the doctor and don't...
Linda, why is it Time, Gentlemen, Please for Time, Gentlemen, Please?
Ah, yes, this is draconian new binge drinking laws. We're all obliged by law now to drink 24 hours a day. That's the gist of it. Patricia Hewitt has said, alcohol is part of our national life. And some of you just aren't making the effort. Was the gist of it. Some of you are having a glass of wine with a meal. What earthly good is that, you weaklings? So they've changed the laws to ensure that we get our full quota of nourishing alcohol and that our city streets are full of colourful chatter and laughter to all hours of the day and night. We want youths falling about in states of undress and vomiting all over the emergency services. That's a night out.
If everyone is drunk, as everyone says, will happen, do you think teenagers will just go off the idea of drinking and will just meet up in town centres to pick up litter and sit around?
Maybe restore old railway lines.
Yes, that sort of thing, you know.
I saw Paxman ask that very question about, you know, what's going to be the social impact. Interviewing Patricia Hewitt, and he said, you know, do you think this will lead to excessive and compulsive drinking? And she said, I bloody love you.
This week saw the introduction of new licensing laws in England and Wales, which mean that thousands of pubs and bars will be able to serve drink round the clock. Supporters of 24-hour drinking say it will lead to a continental way of drinking, with Britain becoming a Mediterranean-style, wine-sipping, non-binge drinking culture, which would be a great idea, except the bars will be in Britain and full of Brits. Armando, who's not ticked all the boxes with his suburban plans.
Oh, this is to do with the inner cities. Lord Rogers, architect supremo, was appointed head of an architecture task force, whatever that is, and has brought out reports saying that the middle classes have deserted the inner cities. How you get the middle classes into the inner cities, I don't know. Build lots of country houses, I don't know. Multi-story barns, that sort of thing.
Sprinkle polenta down the middle of the street. coax them in.
We're having a second house in the inner city. Oh, every weekend we'd love to go to Wolverhampton just to get away from it. Just to recharge our batteries.
And we do use the local shops.
What, Tesco's?
Yes.
Yes.
And we're learning the language. Aren't we missing a very important element of this story out, though? Which
almost
is
certainly.
That it's all John Prescott's fault.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I will not hear a word said against John Prescott because he triumphed this week with his thing about Christopher Mayer. He said, fop in red socks. And if you're John Prescott, that is a hard thing to say. And get right. Sorry, you're going to defend this madman.
No, I just thought I'd mention the name John Prescott. It usually gets a laugh. You don't normally have to. He's making a statement about it, defending himself, but we don't know. He's been talking 20 minutes. Don't know what he's saying. He hasn't reached the verb yet, so.
John Prescott's plans to build thousands of new homes in the countryside have been attacked by a panel of experts which he set up 6 years ago. Campaigners are aghast that even the birthplace of Ringo Starr in Liverpool will be demolished, though they cheered loudly on hearing that Phil Collins' house would be flattened, and booed just as loudly when they heard he wouldn't be in it at the time. Alan, listen to this. Who doesn't want us to know what Tony said to George?
I didn't think we'd have this question because there's a sort of, as it were, denotice injunction on all editors. Apparently George Bush, in a moment, odd for him, of aberration, thought it might be a good idea to take out Al Jazeera.
He thinks Al Jazeera is a bloke, doesn't he?
Al Jazeera, yeah, like Al Martino.
He's Al's
Someone
Carl
broke into
cousin.
My heart and stole a dream or two. Finger of suspicion points at you. I don't know what happened to Al Martino, but he is not a Middle Eastern television station. And George Bush apparently wanted to take this thing out, and indeed had a couple of goes at knocking it about a bit by accident. And Tony Blair, we believe Tony Blair told George Bush it would be a bad idea to bomb Al Jazeera.
Well, the version I saw suggested that the conversation probably ran... George Bush, you know, Tony, I think it would be a good idea to bomb the headquarters of Al Jazeera. Tony Blair, actually, George, that's in a country that's friendly to us. And then, I don't know, my guess is that George Bush's next line would be, that needn't be a problem.
The Attorney General has been warning newspaper editors that they could face prosecution under the Official Secrets Act if they disclose details of leaked face-to-face conversations between George W. Bush and Tony Blair. Insiders claim Mr. Blair went right along with the President's plan to attack a news organisation up to the point George said he wasn't talking about the BBC. At the end of round one, the scores are everybody 4 points. We start round two with a description of the city of Darwin from an Australian Northern Territories guidebook.
Before the 1940s, it was a slow, sleepy, tropical town resting on a beautiful harbour. During the war, when Darwin was bombed, its population exploded.
Thanks, Alex McIntosh, for spotting that. Andy, who thinks like father, like son shouldn't be a matter of course?
Ah, yes, and this is they're concerned that parents are helping kids with their coursework, and that this is creating problems because the parents are finding it extremely difficult. As I understand it, they're going to introduce grave penalties for plagiarism. Now, I thought that the whole point of school was that it was a training for adult life. Why should there be penalties for plagiarism? On that basis, there would be no Jeffrey Archer, there would be no...
You've answered your question, then.
Yeah. And the problem is that people can lift whole essays off the internet, apparently. It seems to me that the answer is to set really obscure questions that there can't possibly be an essay on the internet.
What is the opposite of the word placard?
Yeah.
What colour is Hamlet's hat?
Yeah.
How friendly was Mozart?
Yeah. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, why?
If school is there to teach you about life, and since most of life now involves just using the internet to order stuff, then surely this... Because in 100 years' time, we will just be a big eye and a hand.
And the only qualification you need is grade A in cut and paste.
Yes.
Well, I saw this exact same week, on probably the exact same page of The Guardian, that only 25% of schools have physics teachers. What do you want physics teachers for? It's a gift. You either know how to make a hydrogen bomb or you don't. I mean,
there used to be many more physics teachers until they started testing prototype hydrogen bombs.
Mine, who's called Mr. Slater, pulled this thing of saying, if I had a lever and somewhere to stand, I could move the world. And I thought, go on.
Following a damning report by the Qualifications and Curriculum Authority on coursework copying and internet downloading by pupils, the Education Secretary Ruth Kelly has announced that parents and teachers will be given new guidelines on the help pupils can receive with their coursework. The QCA's findings that pupils have been making extensive use of the internet to download coursework were confirmed when an astonishing 12% of English essays were found to end halfway through with the words, "System error, please reboot." Linda, why are modern ladies tired of conservative attitudes?
This is the new drive in the Conservative Party to recruit more women candidates, and it's called Women 2, number 2, Win. Women 2 Win. Only slightly less annoying than Phones for You, isn't it? And the idea is to get these Tory ladies to become candidates. Not all Conservatives are in agreement with this. Anne Widdecombe doesn't agree with any kind of positive discrimination of any kind for women. She feels that women Tories should get to the top just by force of their own abnormality.
Two points. This week, the Conservative Party launched a campaign, Women to Win, to get more Conservative women into Parliament. Shadow Culture Secretary Theresa May launched the campaign at Tory Party headquarters, but only after the women had withdrawn from the dining room to let the men smoke their pipes and cigars. Among the leadership rivals, David Cameron said he would look at the idea of an A list, though he prefers a Class A list.
You see him on Richard and Judy this afternoon.
No, what was that like?
Did Richard ask him any of his interesting questions?
Oh, any of his funny questions?
Did he try out his David Cameron impression?
Awful. Richard asked a soap star this week, how many parents did you have? Amanda, who's checking motorists' high score?
Yes, of course, yes, motorists. The police are going to bring in drugs tests for motorists, because drugs don't show up in breathalyzers, so they're going to ask them a series of questions, like, did you think you were flying there? Are you David Cameron?
They've got a little gizmo, haven't they? They're going to ask you to play little games.
Little game, like a little computer game, yes.
To those of us who are not comfortable with computers, that's going to be... I think if I say, how do I switch this on, I'm going to get Nick.
I always find it very difficult answering questions, because I have never taken drugs, ever. So I don't even know how to make jokes about the experience of taking drugs, because I don't know what happens to you. Until I saw, there's a BBC digital promotion campaign, which involves an enormous man's head made out of 1,000 other men's heads that fly apart and then reform to form the head of John Simpson. And I sort of think that must be what it's like.
I know what it's like because I take a large number of drugs. And the real problem is the bubble pack when you try to poke them out and it rolls under the sideboard. Oh. And you know it's the only thing between you and Kensal Rise Crematorium. And you can't... Well, anyway, don't talk to me about smack.
This week, the Home Office unveiled a computer test for motorists driving while under the influence of drugs. Traditionally, if officers suspect a driver is under the influence, they'll make him walk in a straight line and stand on one leg. And once they've identified that the chief constable is a Mason, he can go on his way at 120 miles an hour. Alan Wise, Mr. Blair, hoping there won't be fallout from his latest U-turn.
Is this Blair's view that the all those wonderful propellers standing in the sea off Southend aren't going to work, and we're going to have... I mean, I said I didn't do physics at school. Of course I did. I know how nuclear power works. You put a bomb in a tin, and you, you bury it off Dungeness and attach a couple of wires, and it heats Huddersfield. I'm... I can't go into the details of why this works. You will have to trust me on it. But I don't think it's a U-turn. Blair always believed in nuclear power. Not always peacefully, but I mean, he... but I think he always supported the idea that we could run our cookers off bombs, or however it works. I wish I'd done physics.
There was... a couple of weeks ago, I saw this item on biofuels, which is... they reckon that in the future, we'll be able to run our...
It's fuel like muesli, isn't it?
Yeah, no, you put plant matter. Basically, you pull into the garage and you'd say, fill it up with azaleas, please. it's oil from vegetation. So
the shortage of physics teachers is a bit of a problem, one way.
It's going to sound silly, but it is true that one of the major contributory factors to global warming is methane from the farts of massive herds of cattle that are all being fattened up for McDonald's. Now, I've always been perplexed as to why some kind of arrangement couldn't be put on the business end of the cow, trap that methane, and then fuel vehicles with it.
Yeah.
It seems so obvious, I can't...
You were perplexed by that. I was perplexed, I have been perplexed for a long time, why Big Macs taste that way. And I know now...
2 years after a government paper dismissed nuclear power as an option, Tony Blair has signalled his support for a new generation of reactors designed to meet Britain's pledge to cut carbon emissions. The government hopes to build new power stations on existing sites where it believes local opposition will be weaker. But in Sizewell Village, a show of hands among 100 residents voted against the idea by 397-1. At the end of round two, everybody's still level on 8 points. And before we start round three, here's a cutting from the East Sussex Hospitals NHS Trust autumn newsletter.
Remember in prayer the many who are sick of our community.
Thanks to Chris Galloway for sending in that. Andy, who's had to put their diamond exhibition on ice?
This is the Millennium Star or something, was it called?
I think it's called
a curry house?
Sure what it's called. It's a great big diamond.
It's a diamond that's so big it looks cheap. It doesn't look real. It is very big, and it was nearly nicked once when it was on show for some reason in the Dome, wasn't it, as part of the Millennium celebrations, and a very skillful gang of thieves drove a forklift truck into... really very good that these criminal masterminds are off the streets now.
You can't make that fast a getaway in a forklift truck.
That's right, yeah. It was on display at the Natural History Museum, and they got a bit of a tip-off that thieves were about, so they've taken it off display. It seems to me, I mean, police are chickening out, you know. I mean, Morse wouldn't have done that. Morse would have kept it there, and he'd have caught the thieves, surely.
Well, after 12 people were dead...
That's true, yeah. But one of them would have been a red herring anyway. And he would have kept the diamond there, and then Lewis would have made some casual remark in the car, and then he would have said, "Stop the car, Lewis." And then he would have staked the place out. They've had hundreds of policemen disguised as pteranodons.
And at that point, his boss would say, "Morse, you're getting too involved."
It's my one and only... impression I could do is Morse.
Lewis!
That's very good, actually.
Think, Lewis!
Maybe they thought it was just an interactive display at the Natural History. I went to the Natural History Museum with my kids, and we decided to go to the new bit that is full of interactive displays, because interactive sounds exciting. And it just consisted of buttons that you had to push to get certain answers. So it said, "Do ants eat 15 times their body weight? Push the button." And you push the button and a little light lights up a little sign that goes, "Yes." The entire building is just full of kids just banging everything just to see what else it does.
The Natural History Museum has had to cancel its Diamonds exhibition after police warned of plans to stage a daring heist on the prize exhibits. The exhibition was the largest gathering of diamonds ever seen outside Elizabeth Taylor's cleavage. 2 points to Alan. Linda, what hairy subject has got gym-goers in a sweat?
Oh, yeah. Quite a disgusting story, really, of men in gyms. I'm a terrible place. I used to go to a gym, but then his wife found out that was the end of that. But terrible places where people sweat and toil at these awful weights and things. But men wearing skimpy vests in the gym, exposing all their hairy armpits, dripping and sweating all over the machinery. Disgusting. And some gyms have decided to call a bit of a halt to this, really, and say, no, you've got to wear a proper T-shirt with sleeves, preferably one of those Edwardian stripy affairs all the way down to your ankles and up to the top. I'm all for this, really, because I don't like those men who go to the gym a lot and build up their body, because what happens is, build up their body, pump, 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 body goes up, little tiny head, stays the same, so relatively looks like a pea, just rolling about on their massive shoulders. And you'd have to think, similarly, the relative size of their genitals, because they wouldn't, obviously, wouldn't work for them, would probably look like very discreet jewellery, I should think. Nothing showy, you could wear it to the office.
Unless they do weights with their genitals, which is not something I'd recommend.
You said it rather eagerly, though, I thought there.
Fitness fanatic Andrew Ward of Bristol was warned that he faced being banned from his gym unless he swapped his vest top for a T-shirt to prevent other users from having to see his, quote, big, hairy, sweaty armpits, close quotes. The story may well confuse our many American listeners on the internet, to whom a vest is what we call a waistcoat. Mind you, they call trousers pants, handbags purses, and George W. Bush president. Armando, which Siberians have escaped their Berkshire gulag?
Ah, well, I live near Berkshire. I live in Buckinghamshire, which is infested with wallabies and has been since 1940.
Did you say wannabes?
Wallabies. Wannabes. No, wallabies.
Oh, yeah. Wallabies.
They want to be kangaroos, but
yes. Yes.
Why 1940? Did they come back from Dunkirk? little boats pull up along. And suddenly,
they were Churchill's secret weapon. No, some guy was breeding wallabies during the war. Everyone had to melt their fences to help the war effort. The wallabies got out and started breeding. And so now if you go down leafy country lanes in Buckinghamshire, you might see a wallaby hop across. Tell that to police and they'll do you for drugs. But this is about chipmunks in Berkshire.
Mm-hmm.
Siberian chipmunks have got out and lovely, lovely, apparently quite harmless, very nice animals, but they must be shot on sight because otherwise they will take over, they will eat all the grey squirrels and red squirrels and they will breed and they'll form their own political party and they'll run the parish council and before we know it, we'll have a chipmunk government.
Are they pretty chipmunks, like the ones you see
cute
in cartoons?
No, they are
cartoon
like the
chipmunks.
Cartoon.
They are cartoon chipmunks. They're all hand-drawn.
Conservationists are searching for a group of Siberian chipmunks who have escaped from an estate in Berkshire. Siberian chipmunks are the same as ordinary chipmunks, except they once dared to criticise Vladimir Putin. Alan, whose paperwork is plainly going to make them high flyers?
This is Leeds University, where these... I might sound rather cranky now, which is not like me, but these people that we support have spent some years making the perfect paper aeroplane. They could have come to me. As a solitary hack, I have made 38,000 paper aeroplanes. I also have the world record for putting paper clips in a straight line. And I can balance a rubber on my nose longer than almost anybody. That is called the writing life. Anyway, Leeds University paid money to these kids, to these young, brilliant young scientists, to make paper aeroplanes. And they threw it, and it hit a wall and broke. And that's what Leeds University is all about.
They use scissors, though, Alan. You don't use scissors, do you? You're
they use scissors?
I know.
I don't know what youth is coming to.
I know.
Yeah, they you just little, fold, you take
it. I saw them on breakfast television. They cut little kind of aerodynamic sort of snippets out of the back. And I think also it had an engine, which I think is...
Students in Leeds tried to make the perfect paper plane, though purists insist that the plane should have neither incisions nor sticky tape. The average paper plane has a weight of 6.2 grams, while the average standard plane has a weight of a day and a half, if Gate Gourmet has anything to do with it. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
This is from Mrs. Pamela French of Little Abington. And it concerns the what life is like for Hunts now that the rules have changed. And it's from the Hexham Courant. New rules include advice to participants that if you see a fox, do not holler or otherwise draw the hound's attention to it. But please raise your hat or otherwise quietly inform the huntsman so he can avoid the fox.
Linda.
Yes, my thanks to Peter Malloy, who sent this in from the Sunday Times. The manager of a football team in Ferndown, Dorset, has accepted blame for an 8-0 defeat after he boil-washed the team's kit and shrunk all the shorts.
Armando.
This is sent in by David Armstrong from Hazelmere. And it's very revealing of David Armstrong because it's a delivery notice of books sent to him. And it says, delivered your order details, veteran, enclosed, how to be good, enclosed, multi-orgasmic couples coming separately.
Mine is from the Daily Mail, the Budgerigar's favourite paper. Every day this week it's had that. It's a strange sort of threat. It says, free today. Christmas cartoon DVD. Pick up yours from W.H. Smith today, or we'll post the whole collection to your home.
Thank you. Let's look at the final scores. Andy and Linda have a very creditable 14 points, but they've been creamed by Alan and Armando, who've been six winners with 18 points. And before we leave you, here's a letter objecting to a proposed sex shop from the Kent and Sussex Courier.
Southborough is a predominantly elderly population. Do they think its residents are sex-crazy and desperate for hardcore videos, lubricants and vibrators? Maybe a few are, but the majority are quite happy with their walking sticks.
With that, goodbye!
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Linda Smith, Armando Iannucci and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by George Pohl, Simon Littlefield, Paul Carenza and Roderick Crooks. The producer was Katie Tyrrell.